Right, the Cabinet today, we've approved a New Zealand Superannuation and Veterans Pension Bill, which deals with two policy changes with respect to superannuitants living alone, which were announced last year. In the one case where the superannuitant has a partner in full-time care, long-term residential care, it makes it plain that that person living alone will always get the living alone allowance. And secondly, the change dealing with the shared expenses rule, which in the past has been used to deduct from the superannuitant's entitlement. The KiwiSaver bill will be ready for introduction into the House next week. We've done a review on the policy on timber procurement, and Jim Anderton will have something to say about that. There is to be an extension of the reporting date for the Commission of Inquiry into Police Conduct through to the 31st of May. Rick Barker is responsible for further details around that. There is an options paper to go out from Commerce, issued by Judith Tizard as Associate Minister of Commerce, on the experimental use or research use exemption from the patents legislation. There's also been policy approved on legislation for data matching between student loan information and customs. That relates, of course, to new policy around graduates being eligible for complete right of interest when they stay in New Zealand, but not when they go to live offshore. There is to be a discussion paper, major discussion paper issued by the Ministry of Health on the issue of direct-to-consumer advertising of prescription drugs. And we have also approved today the release of a report by a ministerial advisory panel on work-related graduate process, disease or infection, and the government response to that. Coming up in the House this week, the debate on the Prime Minister's statement has just under 2.5 hours left to run, and then the government intends to proceed with the first reading of the Insolvency Law Reform Bill, Securities Legislation second reading, and an Education Amendment Bill, second reading in Steve Mahari's name. We go to Members' Day on Wednesday, and coming up there's a private bill, Trustees Executors Limited in Marion Hobbs's name, first reading of Waitakere Ranges Heritage Area Bill in Lynn Pillay's name. Then there is the Sue Bradford Bill on the Minimum Wage Abolition of Age Discrimination Bill. And then there may or may not be time to get to an Act Bill on Treaty of Waitangi Principles. Coming up on Thursday, Michael Cullen expects to do the first reading of the Appropriation 0405 Financial Review Bill, move to a second reading of the New Zealand Sign Language Bill, and at this time, a first reading of the Employment Relations Amendment Bill, dealing with the vulnerable workers issue, which, when interpreted in court, didn't come out as government had intended, so there's amendment legislation for that. And if this time, again, a second reading of the Crimes Intimate Covert Filming Amendment Bill. Otherwise, this week, a range of different statements coming out. A new schools ICT action plan from Steve Mahari, and the launch of a second stage of Project Activate, which is one of the initiatives to get children active at school. The external migration figures are due out tomorrow. This afternoon, Michael Cullen and Leanne Dalziel have gone across to Australia for the bilateral meeting, annual bilateral, with Peter Costello. Michael has speeches, meetings tomorrow, and then the bilateral on Wednesday with a news conference late that day. We're also expecting out this week the much foreshadowed transit draft 10-year state highway plan. We're expecting the scholarship results out this week. Thursday, two significant overseas visitors. One, the Australian Foreign Minister, arrives for the bilateral talks with Winston Peters. Talks occur on Friday. And on Thursday, General Abizaid, the head of the US Central Command, will be in New Zealand and meeting with me and obviously a lot of defence people. General Abizaid is responsible for that part of the US military with which we work in Afghanistan, and there's been a great deal to do with him and his headquarters over the past few years. Other announcements, I have one here about a visit next week by the President of Lithuania, which makes the point that it is the first visit to New Zealand by a Lithuanian President. New Zealand has had very little to do with Lithuania, both before it regained its independence from the Soviet Union and since. However, since Lithuania has gone into the WTO, and into NATO and into the EU, we have been working to get to know Lithuania better, and we're pleased that the President is coming. The Governor-General will be hosting a luncheon for him. I'll be hosting a dinner with Winston Peters and Phil Gough for coming to that, and other trade and interested parties from around New Zealand constituencies. And the other announcement which has come out from Winston Peters today is a New Zealand response to the mudslide in the Philippines, which has caused such terrible damage. And we've made an announcement of $200,000 to go in through the New Zealand Red Cross to the international effort. And I have written today to the Philippines president about that. Any questions? Obviously, the condition that was put by Air New Zealand was that all sectors that voted on this across two unions would need to approve it. And my understanding is that it was carried by very good margins across both the Auckland and Christchurch Engineers Union people and the Auckland end of the Aviation and Marine Engineers Association. However, in Christchurch, the Aviation and Marine Engineers Association didn't vote for the proposal, but by a very small margin of, in one case, 49-51 against, and in the other, 45-55. That is sufficiently close that one might hope there was some more room for discussion, and I imagine that while we have statements out today from both sides, we may not have heard the last of it yet.
Because New Zealand was quite forthright. You're right, the unions did sort of say they hoped there could be more dialogue with the government and the airline. The airline very quick put out a statement saying this is going ahead. It sounds that they already have contracts in Europe that they've got ready to sign, and this is fait accompli. And sort of saying that's the shareholders might have had for the airline.
The result is so close that one would hope it is not the last word on the subject. For example, with the engineers in Auckland, you've got 63-37% voting for the variation in the contract and 68-32% voting for the new agreement proposed. In Christchurch with the engineers, 63-37%, basically the same percentage of support for variation to contract, and 71-29% for a new agreement. In Auckland Aviation and Marine Engineers, 67-33% for the variation and 73-27% for a new agreement. So you have a very marginal voting down, very marginal, in one of the four sets of votes that was taken. And that seems to me to be the basis for people to keep talking, if that's possible. I think it's a matter for the unions to work through themselves. I think the unions did a tremendous amount of work on this proposal, and I'm sure they will be as disappointed as anyone that by a very small number, and I'm told that these percentages may actually amount to as much as six people being the difference between something carrying and not carrying. And that's why I say it would be best if this wasn't the last word on that.
So the government's position would be a shame if these jobs were lost.
It would be a shame if people didn't keep talking.
And will the government maintain a hands-off approach to all of this?
Well, our approach has always been to urge both parties to go through the procedures set out in the collective agreement, which was a full consultation. The union and the airline entered into that in a very, very good spirit. There's been a tremendous amount of work done on the proposal, and as I say, it is so close that one would hope we haven't heard the last of it. I think at this stage we'd be encouraging people to keep talking.
So that's enough, you won't contemplate talking to the board at all?
Well, what I just said was we would encourage people to keep talking because there's clearly, if you add up the overall numbers in support of this, very, very healthy majorities. The way the conditions were set said that all four sets of ballots had to carry, and one of those four very narrowly hasn't. That's why I think there's a basis for continuing to talk.
Do you have any more options that are more
effective? I think at this point, consistent with what we've always said, we should encourage people to keep working the issues through.
Can I ask you about the leaving
I think it does add poignancy to it. As people know, I'm not a religious person myself, but I think it is important to show religious faiths respect and tolerance towards each other. And I obviously haven't seen what's proposed to be shown on whatever network it is. Nobody has. But as I said, with respect to the cartoons, these issues come down to issues of taste and judgment. And those who publish in these circumstances, of course, have their right to free speech in New Zealand, but that doesn't take away from others the right to say what they think about it.
So presumably it's an interfaith dialogue. You'll be talking more tolerance than spirituality.
I'll be talking about people talking to each other, not past each other, and being able to be tolerant of and respectful of other people's beliefs. I don't expect everybody to share my beliefs, and I don't expect others to expect me to share theirs, but I think the critical thing is that we show respect for other people's beliefs.
Do you think that C4 should screen
I think that's a matter of taste and judgment. As I say, I haven't said it. How can you make a judgment? From what I've heard of it, I'd consider it quite offensive, personally. But as I say, if the network proceeds, then they're going to have to deal with the public debate around it.
Do you find it offensive for the religious aspect or because of
others? As a woman, I find it offensive.
It was apparently shown in Britain 2 years ago with really very little reaction.
I guess it comes in the context of the Islamic cartoon controversy, so it's bound to be seen in that light.
Are you concerned at all about highlighting?
Well, there is nothing new. All journalists were able to access the full police DVD release several months ago. And of course, police, having done a full investigation, decided that there was not going to be action following from it. And at that point, the matter was closed as far as I was concerned.
Were you aware of the Kent Brown allegations, making Bilson inside on that?
Well, I have read the police summary, however many pages it was, of 20 pages. So, of course, I'm broadly aware of the range of things that was canvassed. Investigate the magazine made no effort whatsoever to cover the counter evidence, and I think if you count up, you'll find about 20 teachers talking in quite a different way about what happened at school camps.
Is this going to have any effect on Mr. Gibson's position?
I wouldn't think so.
Is the matter over and done with,
as far as I was concerned? Once the police had done a full investigation and determined that there was no reason to pursue the matter, that was the end of it.
Finally, Prime Minister that visited President Clinton to Auckland in the week. Could you outline what your involvement will be in?
I think my involvement is to chair the session that he speaks at, perhaps to introduce him, as I did when he came for a fundraiser in Auckland several years ago, and I think then to oversee the question and answer period, which is something I've got some experience in.
Do you think it's right that the Zealand taxpayer picks up the police bill or protection?
If a former US president comes to one's country, one is bound to offer protection. We would not want to be a country known for such lax security procedures that a prominent visitor got hurt in some way on our watch. In that sense, it doesn't matter what the reason is that a former president comes for, he will receive the security protection which is deemed appropriate.
The problem is, though, that when it is purely commercial, it stands to make quite a bit of money. I mean, should the taxpayers think perhaps he should at least contribute voluntarily
somehow? I don't actually think that's relevant. I think if we go down the track of saying that you get security, you can pay for it, and not if you don't, that would be a most unfortunate precedent, and it's not one I propose to set.
Is it still kudos for New Zealand that President Clinton wants to come here?
Well, I believe it is. If a seminar charging that amount of money can find sufficient people to make it commercially worthwhile, I would say that's indication in itself of economy and some health. And the fact that the former President Clinton feels it's worthwhile to come, I think, is noteworthy. He will be a very welcome guest here.
What will Mr. Pease be discussing with Mr. Diana?
They will have a full list of bilateral topics. You'd need to get a full briefing from him or go to the press conference or stand up afterwards. But from what I recall of reports around these talks in the past, it's basically been to review any bilateral issues, where we're cooperating through the Solomons to various other areas, talk about international issues and how they're being handled at the present time. I don't think there'd be anything that you wouldn't anticipate being on the agenda.
Do you think you'll ask for help with
the
previous relationship?
Oh, well, you have to put that to him. I mean, it's always nice if your friends put in a good word for you, but we, as I've said in the past, are quite capable of paddling our own canoe. No, I haven't. No, we're staying out of that particular row between the UN and the US. No, I'm just not getting involved in the discussion about it.
Prime Minister, would you not expect to see the speech to which the piece was delivered?
No, I wouldn't expect to see it at all. I may well have a look at it as a matter of interest, but I wouldn't expect to see it. I would expect a speech for the Foreign Minister to be a speech about government policy, and I'm sure it will be.
He's not part of the government, but he's representing the government. Surely you're the one to tell him what to say.
Well, I'm not going to get involved in writing everybody's speeches. As was made quite clear at the time of the appointment, Mr. Peters reflects government policy and speaks as Foreign Minister.
Is he out from your office to have a look at the speech?
I've no idea.
Well, I'm going to be because there does seem to be a big picture forward-thinking five-year plan for New Zealand Forest Peters.
Well, that will reflect work that's been ongoing within the Ministry of Foreign Affairs. Ministry of Foreign Affairs keep me very closely informed of what they're thinking and what directions they're proposing. And very often things are run past me for agreement or disagreement, as the case may be. So I'd be very surprised if there's any surprises in it.
Would you expect them to tender free trade agreements and the deals that he's
to? Not really, because he's not the Trade Minister. He may well refer to that as an element in the relationships, but I wouldn't have thought that would be central.
It is one of our major foreign policy
gains. Well, of course it is, but as one who's made speeches for many years about not having foreign policy solely focused around trade, I can assure you there are many other things to discuss about international relations and strategic direction for New Zealand foreign policy.
Are you concerned about the state of the relationship between the forestry sector and the government over the climate change project?
Am I concerned? Well, clearly there, I heard the question. Clearly there was a bit of a hiccup last week between MAF officials and some elements of the forestry sector. I understand they're meeting with the minister this week, and he will deal with any of the issues there.
Have you made final decisions about trips in Afghanistan
recently? No, but the paper about the rollover of the provincial reconstruction team must be pretty close.
Considering paying back any of the money you spent on the
Veg Park? Oh, I think that's a rather premature question. Quite frankly, there's a whole lot of processes going on around a range of parties' use of their leaders' funds, and I don't think it would be warranted to highlight one instance and not others.
So it's a really short question, does that mean the police, for example,
oh, it simply means that there are various processes going on, and you know, you might cross certain bridges if you came to them, but they're not apparent at the moment.
Would you expect to be interviewed by the police in the course of the investigation?
No, I wouldn't.
What about the U.S. General? Is he also looking at this issue?
Well, he may well be looking at a whole range of parties. Publications from the Leaders Fund.
Are you considering re-lodging a complaint back to the National Party?
Well, there are already complaints in, and I don't think it's really been highlighted at this point that Exclusive Brethren pamphlets have been referred to the police by the Chief Electoral Officer. That was done quite some time ago, in October. He referred, for example, the leaflets, and this wasn't the only one, but this one, which attacked the Green Party, with use your party vote to change the government, and he concluded that it does appear to promote a party vote for National. Now that, of course, is consistent with a view which would suggest that it should have been attributable expenditure.